Domestic violence, sadly, is very common. It accounts for between 16 and 25% of all reported crime in the UK. If you consider that most cases of domestic violence remain unreported, the real number's probably much higher. Research shows that domestic abuse mostly affects women. In the UK alone, one in four women will experience some form of domestic violence in their lifetime. Domestic violence also affects children, men, and elderly people alike, and it's extremely important to raise awareness of this issue. We've recorded a series of podcasts examining the realities of domestic abuse, as personal stories often speak louder than statistics. In part two of our interview with Frank Mullane, whose sister and nephew were tragically murdered by his brother-in-law, I start by asking the difficult question of whether there was anything else he felt he could have done in light of the threats made to his sister Julia.
There were things we could have done. I could have Googled domestic violence. I'm now aware of a massive sector out there, massive information, advice and help. Specialists, people that could have helped us understand risk. 3 days before the murders, or the weekend before the murders, which the murders were on a Tuesday, so Saturday or Sunday, my brother-in-law was ruminating on the idea of installing a safe room in my sister's house. Now, West Berkshire have now agreed to use these, they're called sanctuary schemes in West Berkshire, which is great news. And they're often used in other parts of the country. But what they should be doing, you know, my brother-in-law worked elsewhere and used safe rooms himself, where they protect you from danger. So that was one thing we could have done. We could have Googled domestic violence. We could have sought help and assistance from all sorts of places. We could have become informed about safety planning. So how can Julie leave the house quickly if she senses danger? Where should she go? What access was William having as a young man, actually a child, he was 15 and then 17 when murdered, actually a child. What were his access points to tell people? As his uncle, often staying there, I had a very close relationship with William, but it was a fun relationship. Let's play snooker, let's do this with music, let's sing some songs. William was great into music, and we'd rejig things, and I'm not a musician, but we'd play around with stuff, you know. I never mentioned the serious stuff. I thought my role was to be that loving uncle, fun stuff. But actually, I should have probably pulled him to one side and said, "Will, are you frightened?" You know, I avoided the difficult issues because I was not informed. So we didn't understand safety planning. We contacted the police, but we put too much trust in a police force that had no domestic violence policy, that was not configured to help in this situation, that was behind the times, and that was criticised in the strongest possible terms in the Pemberton Homicide Review because of these failings. Silence is a deadly enemy of all victims, and we have all seen the issues with child abuse in our church. Silence. What an enemy of the child who's absolutely relying on strong and brave people to speak up for them. It's the same in some cases with domestic violence victims. We need the community to stand up and speak on their behalf as well. It's wrong. The church should be liberators of these people, as should the police be. The whole community should be helping liberate these people. Silence is absolutely the total and deadly enemy of anybody being abused. There's a famous saying in America, it might have been Roosevelt, I can't remember. If you want this abuse to continue happening, all you have to do is nothing. All you have to do is nothing. And I guarantee you it will perpetuate. So silence by those that can intervene to protect the vulnerable is a deadly enemy. Vulnerable people need brave, strong people in the position to help them to be brave and to be strong and to speak up about it.
Let's look at the church and the people of the church, the two sides. Twofold question, what can parishioners do, Catholics in the pews, and then also what can the church do, in your opinion, to really bring this to light and help people in this position?
Yes. Why can't the congregation ask their church to make more visible efforts to help people on domestic violence? Why can't we be generating events which spread awareness, encouraging people to join in domestic violence raising awareness days? So the church has, in my view, has an absolute duty here to support those suffering abuse. Now, that means supporting in a non-judgmental way. That means offering religious guidance about non-abusive ideals. That means looking at canon law, which simply says, and I paraphrase this, you can leave a relationship if there's grave and mental physical danger. Well, we know that. But you know you can leave it too if it renders common life too difficult. Now, whatever those words mean, it sounds to me like there is a good, legitimate reasons, supported by canon law, why relationships can end. It is very important that the church does not blindly look to put people back into abusive situations which may end up with a fatality. It is absolutely wrong to do mediation and couple counselling where there has been abuse. It is known to be dangerous. It would be perverse if church teachings recommending mediation counselling which ended in a fatality. So that's the first thing, support. I want to hear the church preaching. I've never heard a domestic violence sermon. I mean, wow, priests must speak to many perpetrators and victims in the confession box, seeking forgiveness perhaps, seeking help. So the priests are meeting these people collectively and individually. Why can't we hear a sermon about this? That's what a living church surely does. Now, the next thing, priests and the wider church must be educated about domestic violence. I can see no excuse for this not happening. I really can't. You know, it's not good enough to have a simplistic understanding. And there are faith toolkits out there. The information's out there, wonderfully provided by an organisation called Against Violence and Abuse. The www.avaproject.org. There's faith toolkits on there. It tells you everything you need to know. So the church must have a very, very good understanding of domestic violence. It must know the risk factors. I find it unacceptable if a priest or church, of the church parish team, if you like, safeguarding, what have you, is not aware of the risk factors. Because if someone discloses abuse to them, they ought to be aware of the risk factors which indicate, likelihood of escalation to extreme violence. And that must happen in the seminary as well. Now, the church should be advertising services that can help people suffering domestic violence. So I contacted Jewish Women's Aid because of something I heard. They tell me that in the synagogues, in the ladies' toilets, are information on domestic violence service providers. Now, in some cases of coercive control and domestic abuse, maybe the only place where a person being abused can go, unaccompanied by her controller, is the ladies' toilet in a church, where the so-called pillar of the community will not follow her for fear of being exposed as not being a pillar of the community. Now, the church also needs to focus on safety. Focus on safety. Go and order the guidance issued by the National Board of Catholic Women. Go and order the faith toolkits. The expense of these is absolutely tiny compared to other expenses in the church, but the payback may be exponential. Build relationships with domestic violence service providers. Know the name of the lady that runs the local refuge. Find out about what the local authority are providing. Get an understanding. People disclose things to priests and churches because they trust and love them. People disclose things to these people because they believe it's safe to do so and they may get help. In my view, it would not be acceptable that a church was unable to respond to help these incredibly vulnerable people. I also am not expecting the church to be the caseworker for the victim. There's professionals out there that can do that. Make the links with these secular experts that understand, by the way, the faith demands, the faith context, the faith pressures on individuals. They're not looking to convert them out of the faith. They're looking to help them in the context, but they have an expertise around risk factors, safety planning. How can victims of domestic abuse move from a situation of control and potential death to a situation where they can live life happily and fully and engage in their chosen faith in the way they wish to, in complete safety and liberty? To me, a living church is about getting active in the community and helping people. We need to help priests with this. It can't all be on their shoulders. It has to be the parish team as well and the congregation. But the wider congregation can be helped via the pulpit, via having away days, growing awareness. We want to see good, honest, active interventions by people standing up. And remember, if they choose not to do this, silence is the deadly enemy of victims of abuse.
If you've been affected by anything you've heard in this podcast, please visit our website, www.cedar.uk.net, for further information and resources. If you need help now, please call the National Domestic Violence Helpline on 0808 2000 247. That's 0808 2000 247 for confidential and professional support.